Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's political and economic events. And today is Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody.
How are we today?
Well, we, I'll speak for you, are great.
That means we are too. It's great here in central, I shouldn't say central Pennsylvania. I'm going to say here in, well, that was a slip going back in time.
Really?
To central PA, but here on the eastern shore, it's a gloomy kind of a day. But I'll take it. It beats that snow that central Pennsylvania is receiving. So anyway, gold today was down. I mean, it was hovering flat all day long. It's down, what, almost $6, $1,851. Silver's down 8 pennies at $25.53. Platinum is unchanged at $1,103. This is all in the New York spot price aftermarket. Palladium was $2,412, down 6. The USDX, I'm waiting for it to break 90. It's trying. It's down 0.21 at 90.16. Crude oil is down 27 cents at 52.50. So, and the paper markets today, I mean, they didn't do much at all earlier in the day. They're slightly lower. And supposedly, they're just taking a breather until the tech earnings come out. But, you know, it's all such a joke. But anyway, the Dow is down 23 points at 30,936. The S&P was down 5 at 3,849. And the NASDAQ was down almost 10 at 13,626. And let's get to the 10-year yield. 1.04. Hong Kong was down just as much overnight as it was up the day before, so it erased all its gains. And same way with Germany, it was down almost 1.75, and they reversed that. So, you know, it almost gets very tiring reporting these numbers anymore. Because just like any, they're just meaningless anymore. There's no meaning behind it, except to the fact that most of you, many of you, probably have it in your retirement accounts and your pension accounts and your IRAs, and you know, you've gotten some good numbers. Dave, I talked to a customer today, and he says, "Well, you know," he says, "I got 10% of my money in gold." I says 10%. Who's telling you to do that? I says, what's that going to do for you? Oh, well, you know, if the stock market falls, you know, gold's going to go up and you know, meet. It's like, wait a minute. Do you really believe? Do you have any idea how high gold has to go? You got $1 million sitting in that account and it loses 50%, so now you're down to 500,000 and gold's sitting at 2,000. Do you really believe gold is going to recover what you've lost at a lousy 10%? But this is what they're being fed this is what they're being advised, so that someone can also sell them other investments. And that's exactly what he said to me. Well, you're just saying that because you sell gold. I says, it's just logical. The one thing I have learned over the investment years that I've been doing this is there should be balance in your portfolio. And anytime you're heavy in something, and particularly the insurance policy, it's just like, again, your house. Why would you only insure your $100,000 home for $10,000? Why would you do that? Dave, do you know anybody who does that?
Not consciously.
Yeah, unless their insurance agent told them to do it. And then they're in a heap of trouble if their house burns down. And they have no replacement cost on their home. So, again, it's common sense, ladies and gentlemen. It's about balance. The whole world, everything is about balance. And so, you know, make sure you have 10%. Yeah, I sell it. Go buy it someplace else. I mean, it's just common sense. And take your profits that you're making in your paper. Pull it out. Get gold. There's things that you can do to protect those paper investments. And if anybody is following what's going on in the world, I can't even imagine that you think that it's going to be normal for but normal is no longer normal. Or will it ever be what we are used to normal? So I was thinking, Dave, you know, I was getting all these brochures from these cruise lines and stuff. And I'm thinking, well, you know, how can they be booking cruise lines? Most of them aren't even boating anywhere. They get closed down. Then I started thinking of all these little ports that these cruise lines would go to. And I was talking to a new client today, and she says they would do tours to go to Alaska. And she says, Alaska's dead. You don't have three or four cruise lines going into these little towns of Alaska anymore. They're all out of jobs. And then you multiply that going around the world, all these poor little islands in the Mediterranean, well, not the Mediterranean, but the Caribbean, and it's... I can't imagine, Dave.
You could rent a boat and sail the port of Los Angeles and Bayonne and look at the tons of shipping containers that are hanging around in the area across the country. Hey, you know, real quickly, quick aside, you talked about the $1 million, and if in a portfolio that has 10% or $100,000 in a $1 million portfolio and the stock portfolio goes down 50%, that means that gold would have to rise to roughly $10,000 an ounce in order just to hit the break-even point, counting that. So if the 900,000 of stocks went to 450,000, your 100,000 of gold would have to go to be worth 550,000, you know, or 5.5 times its current value. And that's about $10,000 an ounce. So good luck with that 10% strategy. Yeah. I'm not saying gold isn't going to reach 10,000, you know, to
but count
you
still
on
lost
it.
$500,000.
Right.
Yeah. You still lost $500,000 that won't be recovered. And you know what, Dave? I do think gold has a very good chance of getting to 10 grand.
You're not alone.
You know. But and I told him the same thing. Oh, let's wait till it gets to 3 and let's wait and see what happens at 5. Because let me tell you, when it gets to 5,000, we're going to see things happening here and around the world financially that's going to scare. That's going to scare us. I'm not going to say what it's going to scare us out of, but... because gold won't reach those levels unless something bad is happening. You know, it's the canary in the mine. When the canary dies, you got problems. That's kind of the same thing. When gold gets up to those higher levels, we got problems. And so few are going to own it. So... And again, so, you know, you hear these, oh, you only need 5 or 10%. No, you don't. Do I sell it? Yes. Go buy it someplace else. I don't care. I'm not telling you this just so you buy it from me.
Look at this alternate scenario, Melody. If instead of 10%, you had 25% in your portfolio, 25% gold, you have $1 million portfolio, and that's 750,000 of stocks cut in half at a 50% crash, that's now worth $375,000. So to, you know, keep that $1 million portfolio balance, your gold piece would have to be 625,000. That's just 2.5 times the 250. So that just, it still means that gold has to go up to about $4,700 an ounce. But think of it in these terms, you know, as far as a hedge goes, and that's what you're really hedging against. The more gold you have in your portfolio, the more of a hedge it's likely to be.
You know, when I started out in this, Dave, we used to recommend 20% gold in your portfolio. This is 25 years ago. We didn't know we'd have $30 trillion in debt at that point in time. We knew the government would print until they came home, till the cows came home. But, I mean, we were still talking being in debt, maybe, you know, millions and maybe a billion. I guess we were in trillions at that time, but not $30 trillion. And everything else happening around that. You know, all the division and everything else, you know, going on a pandemic, whether you believe it or not, we're still dealing with the effects. We're still dealing with, and economies around the world just shut down. And but that's what brought that to mind. I was just thinking, you know, some of these ports, they'd have, you know, you have these ships with 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people on. And you get 3 or 4 cruise lines in a day. I mean, think of Puerto Rico. Think of all around the world. I mean, just that one industry. It's mind-boggling when you think about it, Dave.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. What do you think these people are doing? Not all governments are dishing money out to them. So what's happening to these people? But no, nobody wants to report on it. Nobody wants to show you pictures. Because it might make you think of what's going to happen. What was the number I saw today, Dave? 10 million people? We talked about this weeks ago. They're just now reporting it on mainstream media. Tens of millions of 10 million people are behind over $5,000 in their rent. How do you think they're going to cover it? Oh, I know. Government's going to bail them out. Okay. Then what are they going to do? What about the next $5,000? And we have yet to even feel the impact on any of this. They've done a terrific job, I'll have to say. Because home prices, hey, they rose 9.5%. Go sell your home. It's a buyer's and a seller's housing market, Dave. A strong surge in home prices, you know, doesn't seem to be slowing down. We have a record low supply of homes for sale. Prices nationally rose 9.5% in November compared with last year. It's the strongest annual growth rate in over 6 years. The 10-city composite annual increase in prices was 8.8%. The 20-city composite showed a 9.1% year-over-year gain. You know, your big cities, Phoenix, Seattle, San Diego, they continue to show the strongest price appreciation of all the major markets. And, you know, Phoenix led the way with a 13.8% year-over-year price increase, Dave.
Yeah, and the thing to remember, as we've been talking about, prices have not been fueled by just supply and demand. But, of course, by record low mortgage rates and rising lumber prices. The average rate in a 30-year fixed mortgage, which started November already low, fell further throughout the month, hitting 2.79% by the 1st of December. Now, home prices usually lag sales trends, and home sales have been slightly weaker over the past few months. The normal historical trends, however, may not apply, as sales are slower mostly due to weak supply and not weak demand. It remains to be seen how much higher prices are deterring buyers. We'll know soon enough, as sales of newly built homes do remain strong, and they're selling at a price premium to existing homes. Builders have been ramping up production recently, which could throw a bit of cold water on these very hot prices. Won't be too long till we know if that's the case.
Yes. Well, you know, we talked about bankruptcies, and, you know, we know that the cheap funding costs have extended a lifeline to many of these troubled companies, slowing the pace of U.S. bankruptcy filings. We talk about this all the time. Shops, offices, and hotels have been particularly vulnerable this month to the pandemic. There's a lawyer at King and Spalding, and you know, she believes that the real estate industry is facing an existential crisis. Sarah Borders, she expects pressure to remain on retail as more shopping happens online, and says office real estate will suffer as employees delay a return to work, if they go back to work at all. Everyone wants to work at home. And you know what's amazing, Dave? Everybody wants to work at home, and it's hard to work at home. Not everybody can do it. You have to be disciplined. And I can't imagine that everybody that's working at home is disciplined. So, you know, now maybe those are the ones that'll go back to the office because they need that structure. You know, some needs more, you know, some folks need more of a structure to work and so forth, but it's still going to have an impact on the employees in the office space. A unit of Eagle Hospitality Real Estate Investment Trust, which owns corporate leisure and airport hotels across the U.S., filed for Chapter 11. We talked about that. Department store chain Belk, they're reportedly near a deal to file for bankruptcy, with plans to hand an ownership stake to the lenders. 11 companies with more than $50 million of liabilities have filed for bankruptcy in the U.S. so far this year. It's a little bit of a surprising slowdown compared to the 20 filed each month. And we'll finish this up report up when we get back from the break. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I just want to finish up this report where Alpha Media operates more than 200 radio stations across the U.S. They filed for bankruptcy early this week. This marked the second communications sector bankruptcy of the year, following yearbook maker American Achievement Corporation. Bankruptcy attorney Jeffrey Cohen warns that there could be a pickup in restructurings in February. And it's not unusual to see a lull in January filings, especially in retail, as companies, you know, are still evaluating their holiday performance. And so George Kildonas, he said, he's a partner at Latham & Watkins, expects several industry-specific mini-waves in industries like retail, oil, and gas, and possibly the REITs.
Well, this slowdown in bankruptcy filings, Melody, is at least partially due to the, we'll say, abundant availability of cheap capital for struggling companies. Movie theater operator AMC said yesterday it had lined up over $900 million in financing, including $411 million in new debt, easing near-term bankruptcy concerns they had. The amount of traded distressed bonds and loans fell to about $128 billion as of January 22nd. That's down over 6% week on week and far below where it was at the start of the pandemic in March of last year. Troubled bonds declined 8.2% and distressed loans increased by just shy of 1% in the latest week. Now, the universe of distressed issuers is shrinking steadily as weaker firms actually default and better performers' debt is upgraded. The number of borrowers stuck in the bottom rungs of junk ratings fell to 363 at the end of last year, and that's well below the high of 417 in the second quarter, but almost double the amount in December 2019. So it looks as though another month or so, Melody, and we'll have a clearer idea of what this year is going to look like on the business end of bankruptcy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how long they can keep things covered up and so forth. You know, certainly everything they want to throw at it is going to cover things up temporarily, but there's just no way it can come back from the devastation that's happening across this country.
No, wait a second. Excuse me. Are you saying that debt's not a solution?
If it is, I have to read that book. I have to go back to school then.
Well, but maybe you and I can co-author the novel, the fictional piece of debt.
There you go.
A new solution.
Yes. How about that?
Ills the world?
Well, what? And, you know, I guess they did. I don't know if you watched the confirmation of Janet Yellen as Treasury Secretary, Dave.
I did not.
Yeah. You know, there was a little bit of, not during the confirmation, I'm sure, but there's been a couple of, but not on your mainstream media programs at all, maybe a little written copy here and there about her about her speeches, the millions of dollars, and more so the money that she hasn't claimed, that she hasn't disclosed of how much she made from a lot of these too big to fail banks in Wall Street. So again, you know, stuff doesn't matter. You know, it just what you've done in the past, except for certain people, it does, I guess. Then you'll never hear the end of it. Just depends on which way the wind is blowing on those people. But
it's the big boys and big girls club of America, Melody.
Yeah,
it's the one where you know you look out for each other. You know, hold back too much criticism of the process because, you know, it could eventually affect you.
Mm-hmm. The old, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, baby.
You know, we've been talking about buybacks again. And here, UBS is looking to buy back $4.5 billion in stock. They just can't seem to help themselves, Dave. And today we're reading that the UBS plans to buy back as much as $4.5 billion of shares over the next 3 years. So that's going to bolster the shareholder returns at the world's largest wealth manager after income from managing client assets and investment banking propelled the big gains. And they're doubling the size of a previous program and said it expects to repurchase up to $1.1 billion of shares in just this first quarter. So, hey, you know what? And you know what amazes me? If the bank finished off so strongly with the fourth quarter net income of $1.7 billion, the beat analyst estimates, why do you have to buy back your shares?
Maybe they know something's coming up that we don't know.
You think? I mean, because, you know, I mean, if your company's doing good, why, you know, why would you keep buying your shares to keep it propped up so that you can draw in all the uninformed people? I don't know, you know. So, anyway, what would you like to add to that?
I don't know. It's it's you know, it after a while it does get discouraging. I mean, just the amount of money that's going in. I mean, this recurring fee income helped drive a 22% gain in their private banking division, where clients added more than $21 billion. Dollars in net new money during the quarter. And, you know, I mean, even though UBS had told us before that they had planned on boosting buybacks, at the same time they were going to reduce a dividend that was higher than a lot of its competitors, the bank still targeted about $3.7 billion for shareholders in 2020. Including $2 billion set aside for buyback. So here we are, not at the end of January. What are we, already double the amount of buybacks last year? So getting, well, what's that, $3.4 billion in 2019? So it's just... it's pretty pathetic. I mean, does it suggest that the bank's overcharging its customers? That perhaps some of those investment banking fees are a tad overpriced?
You know, I don't have a problem with banks, multinational corporations. Hey, you know, they're there to make money. Get that. But they're always at the root of our problems for everyone else. They create the problems. They continue to make the money, and we continue to get screwed. And while everybody thinks that they're making money now, you're still losing against inflation. And so all the legislations, the regulations that they do, it doesn't help you. It doesn't help us. It helps them. So they get to push, they get to lobby, they get to go to all these governments, and, you know, all these governments are, you know, ours, everybody's. You know, they just, hey, they're all part of the game. They would be making this amount of money if it wasn't for our governments. Deutsche Bank, hey, Dave, they're under investigation again and again and again. And several of its investment bankers allegedly misrepresented how sophisticated some of their clients were so they could sell them risky products. And it kind of echoes, carries an echo of the early 2000 when security firms from around the world sold these derivatives and to countless and a lot of these ignorant municipalities and small companies across Europe. And Deutsche Bank could find itself at the center of yet another misconduct case just by repeating the same past mistakes. It's not surprising. You know, I don't know what they're going to do since they turned away Donald Trump. He was probably their biggest client. Now what are they going to do? But anyway, I don't know. And again, the German bank's latest troubles are a test for its senior management and for its main regulator, the ECB. And, of course, that the European Central Bank has resolved they're going to clamp down on wrongdoing. Do you think anything has changed since the Great Recession of 2008, Dave?
Yeah, I actually do. Banks have gotten a lot richer.
Yeah, they have.
But what hasn't changed is they haven't learned their lessons. I mean, this Deutsche Bank has, I mean, you think J.P. Morgan, their five felonies in this country are bad. Well, it pales in comparison to this Frankfurt, Germany-based Fortune 500 company. I mean, it's almost obscene, Melody. And the writing's been on the wall well before the Great Recession, when we knew that, you know, the end of Glass-Steagall, that allowed these banks, the same bank with, you know, that had theretofore concentrated solely on the retail side of business, their branches. But now, with banks being able to have these investment banking divisions, most of which sell, and there are literally thousands, I mean, it is pretty insane, versions of these derivatives. But, I mean, there are about a dozen primary types that all of them use, and they're using them more and more, and have been for 2 or 3 years now. So even Dodd-Frank, which, you know, was supposed to rein some of that in, has done diddly squat. And the same's happening in Europe. I mean, we know that the ECB has been trying for close to 6 years to replace the national regulators that were said to be too beholden to their domestic banks. But the ECB still relies on those same local supervisors to take the lead on misconduct cases. Although it's known as a practical regulator, you know, its main goal of essentially maintaining financial stability, nevertheless, is to make sure the lenders it oversees have appropriate control and risk management systems. And it turns out that most of them don't, or at least not enough. And perhaps it's the ECB itself. Perhaps the rules have to be tightened, for sure. And I believe big banks should be broken up. And something like Glass-Steagall return, that wasn't the panacea and isn't still. But I think it could go a long way in eliminating this trend toward high risk again. So I don't know, Melody. I guess we have no one to blame but ourselves in some respects, because where there's so much pressure to get higher and higher returns in Europe, in particular, with negative interest rates. And thus bond yields. I mean, that's creating an incentive for these traders to get clients to take on more risk with these derivative products.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you come back and look at our country, if you look at all of these pensions and retirement accounts that promise people a high rate of return, I mean, a lot of them are 7, 8, 10, 12%. It's like they were... So, yeah, you're right. They keep looking for these, higher returns and higher yields. And with that comes greater, greater risk. And, yeah, it's, they create all these different programs in order to justify and to create those higher returns. It's a madhouse. And no one knows what's that old saying, the left hand, what the right hand is doing with... Neither hand knows what they're doing, something like that. But I mean, it's part also back to our economy, and it shows that our recoveries won't happen. We don't have a recovery. I don't even think we have a rebound, but you're going to talk about in our article for the newsletter is about a stymied economic recovery. And it's, again, you have the uppers who are going through making money and so forth, and there's such a disconnect. I personally don't, I don't believe minimum wage and all this kind, raising that and so forth, is the answer to the issue. It's not the problem. But the real problems can't be addressed. So they have to slap band-aids on everything and hurt. While you're helping one group, you're hurting another. We'll be right back with Dave's article right after this break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen, and heading into the break, we were kind of talking about our economies, the stymied economic rebound. Even rebound is too strong of a word for it. But bump up, I don't know. But you wrote about it in this week's newsletter. Would you like to tell us a little more, Dave?
Well, sure. I mean, we already know in the first 3 weeks of January that the world economies are facing a tougher start than expected as infections pick up and the early rollout of vaccines is slow. While most mainstream economists believe global growth will still rebound quickly from the recession at some point, emphasis on some, they're now saying it may take a little longer to catch fire and not be as healthy as previously thought. However, if you ask the billionaires of the world, the recession's already over. According to a report released yesterday by Oxfam, the top 1,000 billionaires by December 1st more than recovered the 30% of wealth they collectively lost in March earlier in the year. In other words, Melody, for the world's richest, it took less than 10 months to recover the financial losses caused by the pandemic and other systemic issues that preceded it. On the other hand, the report estimates it will take more than 10 years for the world's poorest to recover their losses.
Well, you know, I don't agree. You write that more generosity from billionaires could help immensely. I mean, I don't agree with that. I mean, it would. But, you know, what? That's not, that doesn't solve our problems, though, Dave. But,
and I don't. In the short term, it would.
Yeah, but, you know, then you're beholden to them, just like everybody else. And it's a short term fix.
Well, think about it, though. According to Oxfam, the world's 10 richest people, you know, Bezos, Musk, Gates, Buffett, and the like, added $540 billion to their collective net worth in the last three quarters of last year. And if they donated just $80 million, or 15% of their take, they could keep the endangered millions above the poverty line for 1 year while economies rebuilt. With the remainder of their 2020 profits, these 10 billionaires could pay for administering both rounds of vaccines for every person on Earth and still come out over $300 billion ahead. Data from the World Health Organization suggests a cost of around $9 per dose, or a total of about $141 billion for the world's 7.8 billion inhabitants, Melody.
I mean, there is a stark divide between the top and the bottom. But I do just, you know, it's just my own personal, you know, they shouldn't have to pay for it. We buy their crap. Even the poorest poverty people buy their crap, their trinkets,
what
their
a better
computers.
Way to, what a better way to pay back.
You know? So stop buying it. Stop buying their stuff. But hey, we've been conditioned to enter into a consumerism world. So this is what we get. And this is what they've achieved. And they've worked hard. You know, so I don't know. And I think what it shows, Dave, is that stark divide between the two. But, you know.
Well, one business professor at Babson College and co-founder of the Conscious Capitalism Movement, Raj Sisodia, likened a standard corporate structure to India's caste system. At the top sit generously paid professional college-educated people with benefits and stock options. They're supported by the chew-em-up-and-spit-em-out workforce, people locked into low-paying hourly jobs, often without health care, paid leave, or retirement benefits. In the last 40 years, executive pay has increased by 1,000%, while rank-and-file worker pay has budged a paltry 12%. And thus, the inequality grows wider and wider. Oxfam estimates that with the additional wealth he made between March and September of last year, Jeff Bezos of Amazon could have personally paid each of Amazon's 876,000 employees a one-time $105,000 bonus and still be as wealthy as he was at the beginning of the pandemic. That's stark.
Yeah, but Dave, in order to get a bonus of $105,000, you have to work for it. I mean, there's different levels of what people can do. I mean, he just can't be giving out money to people.
Well, no one's suggesting that, Melanie.
You know,
no one's suggesting that. It's simply the numbers itself tell you how stark the difference is in, you know, between the haves and the have-nots. That's all.
I agree. You know, yeah, I agree. But what is a solution to the problem?
Are you asking that rhetorically?
I'm not sure. I don't know what's your answer. I mean, what is the answer to the problem? The answer to the problem is we have to address our monetary system first. We have to address our currency. We have to, you know, how do we bring jobs back to this nation? It ain't going to happen. And you can't pay somebody $50 an hour for flipping a burger. Because then it'll have to be $100 an hour just to keep up with inflation. So the monetary system is really what has to be fixed. And that's not going to happen until it collapses. So, yeah, you're going to continue to see this, you know, this terrible. I mean, look at our healthcare system. I mean, that got all screwed up. And it was, Dave, and I'm sure when I was younger getting into the workforce, when I would apply for jobs, I always bettered myself. I would leave one place and got a better job, got to get better pay. But the one thing that they all did supply was health benefits. So that whole system is all screwed up anymore. So, I don't know, Dave.
Well, what I do know is that all the talk of growing income disparity comes amid the World Bank's downgraded prediction that the global economy will grow by 4% this year. Mm-hmm. But double-dip recessions are now expected in Japan, the Eurozone, and the UK, as new restrictions to curb the virus's spread are reinforced. And in the U.S., a surge of infections, a new surge, is dragging on retail spending and hiring. That's called for prompting a call for a new round of $1.9 trillion in fiscal stimulus. Now, only China has managed to enter the elusive and exclusive V-shaped rebound. I will not call it a recovery. It just isn't long enough. After reportedly containing the disease early on, but even there, consumers are reluctant spenders. And anyway, Beijing's partly locked down again.
That's if you believe they have a V-shaped recovery, like we're supposed to be having. But yeah, I don't know, Dave. I don't know what the. I mean, this is a prime your article is perfect for what I was talking about earlier, where the cruise lines, the travel industry, all of these areas, and it's just not these, you know, islands and so forth. It's here in the States, too. It's everywhere around the world. People are being, I can't imagine what they're doing to survive. And, but yet we continue to buy things. So, I don't know. It's kind of a messed up, but.
Well, in the wealthy countries, we're seeing that kind of activity. But Oxfam, and then I'll end. Oxfam's report shows that the number of people living in the world on less than $5.50 a day has likely increased by as much as 200 million last year to 500 million people at the end of 2020. 500 million people on $5.50 a day. I mean, no wonder the waiter at the hotel in southern Mexico exults when he got a $20 tip from us a few years ago. And what we know is lower income countries struggle to deliver the essential services and social protections their citizens need. It's the people living in poverty, particularly women and marginalized groups, who will continue paying the price. Well, that's the article. It's already out. Go to our website, dgscoins.com, or our Facebook page, at dgscoins, the at sign dgscoins, Melody.
Okay, let's see. Where do we want to go now? What's kind of interesting today? How about some Netherlands?
It's getting rowdy.
Hey, I mean, this is what happens when you coop people up inside for the Netherlands have faced its worst civil unrest in four decades today after the third night of rioting against a government curfew. And, of course, that was all aimed at curbing the pandemic. Police arrested 184 people after incidents in Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and smaller Dutch cities last night. The caretaker Prime Minister Mark Rutte described the disturbances as criminal violence. It's not clear what impact the unrest will have on their elections that are scheduled for March 17th. So, you know, it's just you can't keep people cooped up. And again, these people are losing their livelihoods. They can't work. That's what they're upset about. And just, I mean, I don't know if they were doing what type of damage they were doing.
That's kind of, looting and vandalizing of storefronts.
Well, it is criminal activity, but...
Throwing stuff at the police.
Yes, yes, So, yeah, I mean, it's happening everywhere. You can't take away people's livelihoods. You just can't.
You can't take away their free access to their herbal remedies in a nation like the Netherlands.
Yeah. But consumer confidence, that rose in January. Hey, Americans are growing more upbeat about the outlook for the economy. Go figure. After what we all just talked about. How could these people have an outlook for the economy and job market with the fiscal aid and the trillions more that has to be printed? I guess that's why. The Conference Board's index of sentiment increased to 89.3 from a revised 87.1 reading back in December. It was close to the median forecast in a survey economists that called for a reading of 89. Anything you'd like to add to that, Dave?
Well, the most important number, in my humble opinion, is their gauge of expectations, which looks ahead 3 months. You know, and that's gone to a 3-month high of 92.5. While their measure of current conditions decreased to the worst reading since May.
You know, I find this interesting. I hope we have enough time to cover it. Shipping carriers are rejecting tons of U.S. agricultural exports. Shipping carriers rejected U.S. agricultural export containers worth hundreds of millions of dollars. This was through October and November. Instead, they sent these empty containers to China to be filled with more profitable Chinese exports. The FMC, the Federal Maritime Commission, has received petitions from the U.S. agricultural exporters warning that the delays in trade not only threaten profits but the reputation of the industry. And there was an investigation launched by the commission, and they're reviewing the trade data out of the key ports in California, New York, and New Jersey to see whether the carrier's refusal to load the U.S. export cargo was actually violating the Shipping Act. So the I don't know, it's kind of interesting. These export container refusals came at the U.S. agricultural exports were actually entering their peak season, Dave.
Yeah, that's that's got to be of concern to the industry. You know, while the exports run all 12 months, the months of November through March are critical since they followed the crop harvests. And based on the orders completed during this window, agriculture producers have more clarity in planning for the upcoming harvest. This could put a damper on that, Melody.
Yeah, boy, oh boy, that's really interesting. And again, it has some devastating effects. Anyway, we're out of time. I hear that music. 1-800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man.